This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice. Today's verse comes from 1 Samuel 11, verse 2. But Nahash, the Ammonite, said to them, "On this condition I will make a treaty with you, that I gouge out all your right eyes and thus bring disgrace on all Israel." This is how political treaties should happen. They should have things like, "And I'll gouge out all your eyes," instead of, "I'll attack you," or, "We'll start a war." It should just be like, "All right, we're shaking on this treaty, and then I'm gonna just chop off all your left arms." Oh, that'd be terrible. But that threat would keep in place so much stuff.
Absolutely.
Especially if it was just for like the political leader and his friends, not like the whole people. Oh well. This is Scripture Read Badly. My name's Jeremy.
My name is Ryan, and today we are going to be looking at 1 Samuel chapters 11 and 12. Potentially moving on to 13, but probably finishing with 12. And also, as we introduced last week, we have King Saul, and we get to see him established as king over Israel, as well as Samuel kind of stepping out of the picture and the spotlight being entirely on Saul and his
good times.
Saul and his sons and his princes and whatnot. Now, Samuel obviously doesn't die here yet, but I imagine this is probably within the last 5 years of his life that we are going to be following now. Samuel will ultimately die, I think, around chapter 19 or 20 or something. I don't know. Who knows?
No, doesn't he?
He anoints David in 17, I think.
Oh, so, okay. Yeah. I read Samuel's farewell address, and I was like, oh, he must be dying soon, but...
I know that.
He's just going on a quick
nap. That's what got me on this tangent. Yeah. He's just having a big old goodbye.
A big old nap.
Yep. Okay, so as we pick up here in chapter 11, we have Nahash the Ammonite. And Jeremy, as you're able to see on our shared Google Doc, not everybody will be able to see that, and I imagine possibly no one else, but the Ammonites were from the land of Ammon, or Ammon. I don't know how you want to pronounce that.
But Ammon.
Ammon. It's right next to the tribes of Gad and Reuben. And Gad and Reuben settled on the eastern side of the Jordan. They were the ones that refused to cross over with the rest of them. They saw the land, saw that it was good, and went, yeah, this'll do. So they are bordering on the Ammonites to their east. And so it would make sense that any problem that that we see here, any kind of siege that takes place, will happen somewhere around or at least through the land of Gad or Reuben. So it says here that Nahash went up and besieged Jabesh Gilead, and all the men of Jabesh said to Nahash, "Make a treaty." And he's like, "Yeah, all right, I'll make a treaty with you, and I'll gouge out all of your right eyes, bring disgrace on you." And they say, "Give us 7 days respite, that we may send messengers through all the territory of Israel. Then if there is no one to save us, we will give ourselves up to you." So it looks like they are in somewhere in Gad, Jabesh Gilead. And so,
yeah, it's right on the river.
Yeah, Jeremy, can you help me understand exactly what's going on here? It looks like they've been besieged, and so they're saying to the people that have captured them, I don't think we can defend ourselves against you. Let's make peace, but before you gouge out our eyes, we're just going to send a call for reinforcements, and if no one comes, then you can do it? Is that what they're saying? Or are they saying...
Yeah, very much.
Okay, okay. So they're saying, we'll agree to this terrible stipulation if you agree to letting us call on help.
Yeah, and I wonder if because Saul's just been kinged or crowned or whatever the technical word is.
Kinged, yeah, like in checkers.
If everyone is there, like celebrating him, and then these Ammonites or whoever they are are like, ooh, it's time to attack! Maybe they're geniuses.
Maybe, yeah. Because I believe this is happening, the coronation of the king... probably happened somewhere around Shiloh, I imagine. I don't remember from last week. It's been a long time.
Yeah, where's...
Mizpah.
Oh, Shiloh's in Ephraim. I
it was in
you.
Mizpah.
But they're not too far away.
No, that's right. Mizpah's in Benjamin.
Jeremy says, knowing he has a car. Well, I don't have a car, but the possibility of a car, but that's probably long to walk.
Yeah, so the coronation was in Mizpah, which is in northern Benjamin, which is right underneath Ephraim. So as we remember, Ephraim's kind of been the central hub of Israelites' spiritual life and culture up to this point. And so Shiloh is, I imagine it'd be maybe 2 hours drive north of Mizpah.
Whoa. Okay.
But I don't know what the scale of this map is. It could only be 20 minutes. Who knows? I guess we'll never know. There is absolutely no way of knowing, but... Mizpah.
No one in the world knows.
That's right. Mizpah and Benjamin are on the opposite side of the river to where the siege has taken place in Gad. So it looks to me like the call will have to be sent across the river, and that probably a lot of representatives from Gad, from Reuben and such, have already gone over there. And so if this has taken place while the coronation was happening, then that was a very, very strategic move on the part of the Ammonites.
Very. What good guys. Impressed.
Yes. Yes, we like them. Okay, so then it says, when messengers came to Gibeah of Saul... Gibeah. Don't see it on my map. I imagine it is somewhere in Israel. They report the matter of in the ears of the people, and all the people wept aloud. So, sounds like a pretty bad thing that's happening here. So, if I'm correct, looks like the Ammonites have sieged this place and said, we will go further, we will capture more of your cities, unless you make this treaty with us, and we'll gouge out all your right eyes. But... if you get reinforcements and you want to stand up to us, we'll give you a chance. But they're probably being a bit cocky because they know Israel doesn't really have a very strong army at this point, or at least not very well assembled. It's mainly in tribal groups. And it's usually been under judges up to this point where armies have been formed, but Samuel has been a peaceful judge. So perhaps that is them thinking... they've had peace for 40-odd years. We can catch them by surprise here. So everyone in Israel looks like assumes that they're done for, that they're going to have their eyes gouged out. And what do you think the significance of gouging out the right eye is?
Many. Like, it says shameful, so maybe it's people who have half body parts are just... unuseful or useless to the society.
Mm.
And some of that is from... not to your Deuteronomy. Yeah, possibly Deuteronomy or even Leviticus. Mm-hmm. Like, if such and such happens to a person that they're not a part of the community or something. But it's also, if their weaponry is to do with depth of field, that would thrash that out of the park. And so it'd weaken them.
Like with archery, forms. They wouldn't be able to see... if they were right-handed.
Yeah, exactly. But I also think with stabbing people, like if you're a right-handed and you've just taken out your right eye, you can't really...
yeah.
Oh, maybe you could. Have you seen the movie Kingsman? I just saw the movie Kingsman. And he, when he loses his eye, he loses his depth of field a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and maybe it's just the pain of having your eye cut out, but not dying. Like, it's a torture sort of thing.
Mm.
And back then, it's not like they had very good medicine, so maybe some of them would just die anyway.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Or, yeah, at least get infected, maybe. All right, okay.
Gross.
So, it mainly looks like a gesture that would permanently weaken every person in Israel.
Yep.
So, they would no longer be as nearly as effective in battle. For one, they would be half blind, so they wouldn't be able to see on their right side. They could easily get blind-sided. But also, if they were archers or anything that required specific use of their right eye, that'd be bad. That would be very bad. And if they were optometrists, then they're going to be straining their own eyes. How can they help other people with their eyes? Who knows?
Maybe they could still.
Maybe.
I'm not an optometrist, and I don't know how good optometry was back then.
Well, speaking of fields of vision, depth of field, Saul was coming into... He was coming out from the field. Man, it was right there.
Behind the oxen. You had a very good segue just then, and then you ruined it. And Saul sees all the weeping people, and he's like, what's wrong with the people that they're weeping? First question, why was he out in the oxen field when he's the king? Shouldn't he know about these things before anyone else?
Hmm.
Shouldn't they have come and told the king? Oh, maybe they're not used to having a king yet. It's all a learning process.
Hmm.
He asks, what is wrong with the people that they are weeping? So they told him about the men of Jabesh. And the Spirit of God rushed upon Saul when he heard these words,
awesome.
And his anger was greatly kindled.
Mm.
Which I wonder if that would be interesting for the people too, because I'm not sure they would have seen the Spirit rush on people often, right?
Yeah, at least not recently, because this is the same language that's used with Samson, whenever he would
mm-hmm.
have strong moments. Moments of incredible strength and slaughter Philistines with a jawbone of a donkey and such. It was usually the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him and then he did this great thing. So it's mm-hmm. the same language that's being used here, Hebrew, obviously, but the same literary device that is being implemented here in its using that same phrase. I still have a little bit of sick brain, so if ever I mumble or lose a segue somehow, I'm blaming it on the lingering bus face, although I imagine by this stage it's more like a bicycle face. I don't feel like I have a bus parked right in my head, but it's more like maybe a penny farthing, just a big old wheel and a little wheel.
Like a big old wheel and a small wheel.
Yeah.
And impractical usage.
Yes.
That's a good analogy for sickness.
How did they get
and,
up there?
They had stools, I think.
So they carried a stool with them?
Oh, true. How do they stop?
Or did they just kind of leap up
wheels.
There? Like some kind of gymnast?
Yeah, like a circus. Like hop, 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 hop. It was that time of life, right?
Ooh. Or even mustaches. Better. Even better. They knock the penny farthing onto its side. And so then they mount it while it's leaning on the ground. So one of their legs is smushed against the earth and the other leg is on the pedal. And then they use the leg that's smushed against the earth and their free left hand or whichever way they're leaning. And they push themselves with great strength up off the ground until they somehow manage to balance right at the top. It just kind of rights themselves right back up. That would be...
Yeah, that seems like a little impractical if you're wearing a suit. And I always imagine the people riding penny farthings are wearing suits.
Oh, absolutely.
Or like no shirt.
Bowler hats, at the very least.
Yeah, bowler hats.
If they were
and
wearing...
sweet mustaches.
Yeah, if they weren't wearing shirts, if they were just shirtless with some kind of long trousers, I imagine them wearing a bowler hat still.
I'm just Googling because. It.
Okay, great. That sounds wonderful. Well, penny farthings aside, Saul gets the Spirit of the Lord rushing upon him, and he takes a yoke of oxen and he cuts them in pieces and sent them throughout all the territory of Israel by the hand of the messenger, saying, whoever does not come out after Saul and Samuel, so shall it be done to his oxen. So Saul is making a statement, a very bold statement, after his anger has been kindled, that he's saying, look at these oxen, they've been cut to pieces, they're probably very bloody and probably very smelly by the time they get out to where they are going. And he says, may this be a sign that whoever doesn't help us defeat these Ammonites, this is going to happen to your oxen. He doesn't say this will happen to you, because that's not very Spirit of the Lord-like. But up to this point, true, we've seen that in the Old Testament, God has not been opposed to slaughtering animals to make a sign for the people.
True. And also people at different stages.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that... Oh, now I've forgotten. See, I don't have bus face brain. I just have that all the time. Kindled. Okay. So I always thought kindled meant to make smaller, but it actually means to make bigger, right? Like his anger was increased.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Then, this is exactly what Samuel said to the people if they had a king, that he would ask for their sons in battle, right?
Mm.
So straight off the bat, he's like, all right, let's go defeat those people. Not thinking like, oh, maybe he did think about God defending them because the Spirit of God is on him.
Mm.
So maybe this is a combination of the two things. Interesting. But it's also interesting that back then they didn't really have SMSs or email, so they had to send cut up bits of cow,
yeah,
oxen. What's the difference between a cow and an oxen? Probably nothing. I'm going to Google that too.
Yep.
Also, penny farthings, you would get on the back wheel and push it off like a scooter, I think. And then after you've got it going, then you get up on the big wheel.
That seems precarious.
I think. Yeah, very. It looks precarious.
That's wonderful. I've always pictured oxen just being another name or another name for a type of cow. Maybe not the cow that we are, that we necessarily think of.
It's a bovine trained as a draft animal, and it's usually castrated. And in Australia, it's called a bullock.
Apparently, okay.
A bullock. Classic Australia.
Bullocks.
Using different words.
Yep. Okay, oxen are bullocks.
So Saul calls his people to battle using this interesting messaging technique.
Yep.
And then it's an interesting sentence. Then the dread of the Lord fell upon the people and they came out as one man.
Wow.
Like mass conviction. Like, oh, yeah, we have to do this and protect our own.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. So it's like the Spirit of the Lord fell upon the king and then fell upon everyone.
Yeah.
And there are 300,000 and the men of Judah 30,000.
Wow.
That's got to be like freaky for the attackers. Like, we get to gouge out their eyes. This is the best military conquest we've ever had.
Yeah.
And then 300,000 people come out.
Yeah. And they would have rallied very quickly, I imagine.
Yep.
Because it looks like it doesn't look like much time has passed between the siege at Jabesh Gilead and the troops rallying. So it looks like they've been besieged. The messengers have gone to wherever anyone is, gone to tell Saul. Saul says, this is bad. All right, you guys need a help. Because it is your responsibility, it's your duty, and if you don't, then all of your livestock, essentially all of your wealth, will be destroyed. Yeah. And I guess he wasn't saying, I will go out and I will seek you out and kill your oxen. He's saying, this is what is going to happen to you and your possessions if you don't come and help. You will be disgraced, your possessions will be worthless, etc., etc. So maybe he was reiterating to the Israelites what was going to happen, that their lives and their livestock would be ruined. So you better do something about it. And you're right, this is his, looks like his first act as king, and it is calling the sons out to war. So, pretty crazy.
Totes crazy, like a big old thing.
Yep.
And then, when messages came and told the men of Jabesh, they were glad.
Yep.
Because they were told, tomorrow by the time the sun is hot, you shall have salvation. And you wonder what they think that means. If they ever imagined 330,000 men are about to come protect you. Because, does it say how many of them there were?
No. Excuse me.
It just says besieged. So it's probably a bunch of people. Bless you with 1,000 blessings.
Thank you.
And the next day, Saul put the people in 3 companies, and they came into the midst of the camp in the morning and struck down the Ammonites until the heat of the day, and those who survived were scattered so that no 2 of them were left together. That's a pretty cool defeat.
Wow.
A pretty complete defeat. That's a better word to describe it.
Yes, very complete.
And so this is Saul's first, like, battle, right?
Yep.
And so... And he did it quite convincingly and quite confidently.
Oh, hang on, hang on, 1 second. The clothes in the rain, sorry.
Okay, see ya. And so while Ryan's pulling in his clothes from the rain, this is time for Jeremy just to talk about whatever he wants. And so I googled Gibeah to Jabesh Gilead to see how far it was and how long it would take the people to get there to send the messages. But I don't think there's... I haven't Googled it properly because my brain's thinking about talking into this microphone instead of Googling effectively. And in the background, you can hear Ryan complaining about how the rain has destroyed his time. Which is kind of funny because I can't dry anything outside because it's too cold or it rains. So I have this little room downstairs. But I do miss the Australian sun that dried up all the rain like the Itsy Bitsy Spider song. I wonder if that song was made in Australia or if it was just international. Oh, you're back. Hello. I just had a little rant by myself. And it was pretty funny hearing you yell about the rain. But also, I can empathize. That's an extreme sadness. But not a sadness where we are in the Bible. It's a very celebratory time. And a happy time that their border cities... Oh, it's not even their border city. It's like internally... is being protected by its king.
Hmm.
Because the judges weren't, like, national, so they hadn't had someone respond like that.
Mm-hmm.
Non-regionally in their time. Anyway. And then the people said to Samuel, "Who is it that said, 'Shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death.'" Oh, okay, so that question is more sarcastic, right? "Shall Saul reign over us?" It's not like an attempt at learning the answer.
Yes, it looks like the people of Israel, in the light of such a crushing defeat of their enemies, they're saying, "Who are the people that question Saul's leadership over us? We'll kill them."
Yep, smooth. And Saul's like, "Nah." "Not a man shall be put to death this day, for today the Lord has worked salvation in Israel." So, he's not power hungry yet. He's like, "No, that's fine. We're not going to be a band of ruffians internally.
Yep.
We're going to protect our own," which I think is honourable. And I wish he had stayed like that his whole career.
Yeah. He started out pretty well, this guy. Good first day. First day on the job.
Good first day. Then they want to go to Gilgal. Oh, hang on. Where's our map?
Where's Gilgal? Gilgal is in Manasseh. It's kind of right at a... pretty much right at a junction between Ephraim, Benjamin, Gad, and Reuben. Right near the river. Not far from Jericho.
Is that rebuilt?
Didn't someone... Yes. Yes,
didn't someone
Jericho
have to die
was,
if it was rebuilt? Is it one of those
I don't
cities?
Know. I think it was... I could be wrong, and I may be misremembering, but I believe Israel, if they hadn't resettled Jericho by this point, they do eventually. They at least rebuild it. or build a new city in its place.
Ooh.
And I think that's okay because the previous Canaanite city was ruined. So they're rebuilding on ruins as opposed to rebuilding the ruins.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they're making something new on top of something bad as opposed to remaking something bad.
Well, you got to remake it.
Yes, yes. Okay, so everybody goes to Gilgal, and there they make Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. So the statement that Saul would be made king, and that he, it was the proclamation of his kingship that took place in Mizpah. Now, this is in Gilgal, again, not very far from Shiloh. It's all kind of central Israel. And I think that makes sense to have the capital, at least the hub of activity, where major things take place in the center of the nation. That way, everywhere is more or less the furthest north is equidistant to the furthest south and so on. So it's kind of a... It's a good spot for a hub.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to stack the nation too much in the south so that the north is exposed and so on. Something like that.
But I found out the other day that that's what American state capitals were supposed to be. Like, not the actual capital, because that's way over on the side. But most state capitals in America are in the center.
Oh.
And it's not the biggest city. It's usually just as central as they can get, and then they just created a city there. And I was like, whoa, my mind has been blown.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. I can at least see that for a lot of states. My wife's from Michigan, and the capital of Michigan is not Detroit. It is Lansing, and that's smack bang in the center of the lower half. So
yeah,
that makes sense. Okay.
That's cool.
Very cool.
All right. Yeah.
So they're establishing their own District of Columbia.
Yep.
Kind of in that central Ephraim, Benjamin, lower Manasseh area. So that's where Saul is made king. That is his coronation, I guess. So it wasn't his coronation earlier. It is now his coronation. He's putting on the fancy gloves, taking up the scepter, and trying not to turn things into ice, or that might be frozen, I'm not sure. So they sacrifice peace offerings before the Lord. Frozen's pretty good.
Way overhyped. I will never let it go.
I don't think I've seen it in 4 years.
Okay.
But I've really enjoyed it at the time, and I'll probably watch it once before the new Frozen movie. Probably watch the new Frozen movie once, unless it's really good, in which case I will pace it out over the next 5 years. Because it's just it's a lot, and I have a 1 year old niece now, so
nice.
May have to sit through that a lot. So they sacrifice peace offerings before God, and Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced. So that's fantastic. Good on them. They rescued a city in Gad, and consequently their entire nation. Everybody feels good about it. Everyone feels good about the leadership of Saul. Saul is in a good place. The Spirit of the Lord is on him. He's doing good stuff. Good on everyone.
Good on everyone.
Does it stay that way forever? Does it? I believe it always is happy in Israel after this
point. Yeah, and Saul's still alive. He's been leading them for like 2,000 years.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. He's got a good Instagram page. Speaking of Instagram, you should follow us. On Instagram, some cool new stuff have just gone up. If you like it, share it, tell your friends about us.
Good plug. Yeah, this is it's a new initiative that I've been wanting to do for the last 6 months or so. Jeremy can attest to that. Every time I call him up, I say, oh, I've been meaning to do this thing for Instagram where I make our logo into a graphic and then put clips there, make it into a bit of a soundbite reel. And I finally did it. Because I'm on my uni holidays and I didn't have a day of work today. So I was able to finally get something done. So that scripture read badly on Instagram. Also share them on Facebook. But it's cool because you get to hear snippets from the episode. And if you like what you hear, you can actually listen to the whole thing. And if you don't like what you hear, then that's fine. You can, you'll know for sure, I guess. Yeah. All right. Sounds good. Okay, shameless plugs aside, we're in chapter 12 now of 1 Samuel, and this is a very long address that Samuel gives to the people of Israel.
So you can read it yourself.
Yeah, so, okay. So I'm going to read what my ESV Study Bible says about this.
Yep.
It says, the setting of this address is not clear. The sentence structure at the end of chapter 11 suggests a complete end of a section, and therefore the chapter 12 begins a new section. The address was probably given on an occasion different from that in chapter 11. From now on, Samuel is no longer the judge of all Israel. The age of kingship has begun. But this is neither a retirement ceremony for Samuel, nor his last public address. His authority as the prophet who gives the word of God to the king and people of Israel remains powerful. So this next part here is very unclear. When does it take place? To whom does it take place? Wherein and why for and therefore? Five and whatever.
They're five, indeed. Whom? Whomst?
Yep. So Samuel tells everyone in Israel, listen and look, I have obeyed your voice. I've given you a king. And now look, the king is among you. The king's before you. And I'm old and I'm gray. Maybe his hair, or maybe just his skin, I don't know.
Yep, definitely his skin.
Just grey skin, black
beard. He got the black lung.
Yeah, grey skin, black lung. He's got it all. He's a very monochrome fellow.
Yep.
And behold, my sons are with you. I have walked before you from my youth until this day. We knew that Samuel had sons, didn't we? Did we talk about that?
Yeah, they were terrible.
Yeah, that's right. So he had kids. The kids weren't good. So he
that was Eli. Samuel's kids were probably fine.
Yeah, probably fine. I may be misremembering, but he may have... His sons may have taken bribes and been bad. So I think that may have been... whatever. All right, so he says, my kids are among you, and I've lost my spot. Here we go.
And, well, he's doing a similar thing that Paul does in some of his letters, like, I financed myself, I never put you out, I was focused on the calling that God put on my life.
Hmm.
So who can stand and say that I did anything else?
Yeah.
The Lord is my witness, who appointed Moses and Aaron. Now therefore stand still that I may plead with you before the Lord concerning all the righteous deeds of the Lord that he performed for you and your fathers. He's like standing up to them and saying, God is awesome and God has done all of these things. And even though yep. you asked me to do certain things that I did for you, ultimately you should praise and worship God and not the things I've done or the things that you have asked me to put in place.
Mm-hmm. And this is all a little bit like when Moses would address the people of Israel after something significant had happened to remind yeah. them that it was God that had done whatever it was. And speaking yeah. of Moses, Samuel then brings him up and says, remember, Moses and Aaron were led by the Lord out of Egypt. Now stand still that I may plead with you before the Lord concerning all the righteous deeds of the Lord that he performed for you and for your fathers. So this is a spiritual course correction that may or may not be warranted in some cases, but even if it isn't, it's always healthy to be reminded. So he's just making sure that everyone is on the same page, that they remember the history. They remember that when Israel disobeyed God, there were consequences, and when Israel obeyed God, there were positive consequences, and God did what he'd promised. He delivered them. He was always for them. And so he's reminding them, don't have other gods, blah, 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 knock down your high places and your Ashtaroths and whatnot. And even though, and now, this is verse 13. Behold, the king whom you have chosen, for whom you have asked, behold, the Lord has set a king over you. If you will fear the Lord and serve him and obey his voice and not rebel against the commandment of the Lord, And if both you and the king who reigns over you will follow the Lord your God, it will be well. But, so here he's stating the consequences for disobeying the commandment and essentially breaking the covenant that God established through Moses with the people of Israel. He's saying, but if you will not obey the voice of the Lord, and if you rebel, then the hand of the Lord will be against you and your king. Now therefore stand still and see this great thing that the Lord has done, that the Lord will do before your eyes. And then he's saying, is it not the wheat harvest today? I will call upon the Lord that he may send thunder and rain. I'm getting a little bit of that right now. I'm not sure if the listeners can hear, but there's quite a lot of rain happening outside.
Are you getting thunder?
No, I don't think so, but I might later. Excuse me.
So you didn't rebel against the king?
Not that I'm aware of, but I don't think it's harvest right now. It's supposed to be. It's supposed to be autumn, but who knows? It's the Gold Coast. It's summer 9 months out of the year.
Yeah, and here it's the opposite.
Spring the
of
other
that.
Three. Yeah. Yep. So he's saying, as a sign that God is with you, this is what's going to happen. There'll be thunder and rain, and you will know that you'll see that your wickedness is great, which you have done in the sight of the Lord, in asking for a king. And so Samuel calls upon the Lord, and the Lord sends thunder and rain, and all the people greatly feared the Lord and Samuel. So this is a very interesting part of the story that I don't recall paying attention to before. Yep. So Samuel is, after the first great victory for the new kingdom, he's saying to them, hey, remember what you asked for, the direction that you have sent your nation in from now on is wrong. It's second best. You need to be reminded of that. And Israel is afraid.
Which is probably good.
Yeah.
It's probably good to be a little afraid.
So then the Israelites beg Samuel to intercede on their behalf. They recognize that what they've done is evil.
Yeah.
But they still want to go ahead with it.
Yeah, well, and he's wording it in such a way as, like, you've made your choice and there's okay consequences and there's terrible consequences. And so as if these things are followed, things will go well for you.
Yeah.
And I think God does that with us all the time. Like, oh, you've made your choice. All right, well, you get to sleep in this bed, but if you do these things, things are going to go even worse for you. But if you stay on this line after you've made your terrible choice, things will go okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all over. Like, heaps of things we choose.
Right. Because it's the butterfly effect. If you choose to do one thing instead of another, it will affect where you end up in particular moments throughout the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Whether it has a direct effect on it or not. So God is essentially saying, you have chosen to go off down this path. You have passed the point of no return with this decision. And now I'm going to make the best of it from that. Or remember to make the best of it and consult me and fear me, so that you do make the best choice going forward. Even though this branch isn't the perfect branch, you can't go back to that perfect branch anymore. It's like after Adam and Eve ate the fruit and had the knowledge of good and evil, they couldn't go back to the perfection of the garden. They couldn't stay there because that was no longer their reality. Okay. All right, so then the people are pleading, and then Samuel responds, don't be afraid. You have done all this evil, yet do not turn aside from following the Lord. Okay, and he says, "Moreover, as for me, far be it from me that I should sin against the Lord by ceasing to pray for you. And I will instruct you in the good and the right way. Only fear the Lord, serve him faithfully with all your heart, for consider what great things he has done for you. But if you still do wickedly, you shall be swept away, both you and your king." So it's like a final warning that he's giving them, but he's also recognizing that it remains his job to intercede for the people and be their spiritual guide, even though they've chosen the king as the political and military guide.
Yeah.
Or authority, rather.
Authority.
Okay. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of chapter 12. Jeremy, do you have any other thoughts about anything we've talked about from the farewell address or from defeating the Ammonites?
It's interesting that this shows a lot of what political leaders' jobs are, to protect the people, and protect the people real quick. Like, he didn't stop and be like, "Oh no, I want more taxes before I organize this." And he didn't fight on their behalf. His job was just to send the message out with a threat, almost, to get people to protect their own. Whereas back in the judges' phase, you didn't have that authority in the land. It would just be on the backs of other people to agree with Israel being a state and to protect them. Otherwise, Gad would just be left alone to fight their own battles. And so as you create states that are bigger and bigger and bigger, you give more power, but also very much more responsibility of protection to the higher-ups, to be speedy and to be in the... to have the capacity for that speed too. And that's why people have standing armies just in case. Because if you didn't and someone did invade, you'd be standing around sending bits of cattle to different people to try and get enough people, but then it'd be too late.
Yeah. Saul is doing a great job. He's doing a bang-up job at this point, protecting Israel, making sure that their safety is his primary concern.
Yeah.
And Samuel is taking over as the spiritual authority. So this is the separation point between the church and the state in the nation of Israel. And we will see that this separation has consequences, and that prophets will end up interacting with kings who want nothing to do with them. And so the spiritual guidance of the whole nation is completely different, because the political and military guidance is way off track. So somewhere along the way, the kings lose sight of the spiritual life of Israel, and that leads to bad things.
Bad things.
So I guess some advice that I have for the listeners about all this is that if you ever find yourself as king over a country, please, please, please cut up a few cows, send them off to people, and just let them know this is going to happen to you. Well, it'll happen to your cows, but maybe you, who knows. If you don't come and fight for us, it's the most convincing and persuasive form of conscription that I think I've ever witnessed, and it works wonders. So if you ever find yourself in a position of royal authority, please do that. It works.
It really does.
But this has been Scripture Read Badly. My name's Ryan.
And I am Jeremy.
You can find us on all the social medias. They're in the episode description. And follow us on Instagram, because we have some fun new things going up there, some snippets from episodes. And I'm hoping to, maybe, if I can get around to it, going back to some of some previous episodes and seeing what I can do about mocking up some flashback type of reels. So we'll see about that. But in the meantime, this has been Scripture Read Badly. Thanks for listening. Jeremy, do you have a blessing for the listeners?
Bless you with all of the sunshine and good timings forever.
No moonlight.
No, sometimes moonlight when appropriate.
And occasionally boogie.
What?
Don't Don't blame it on the sunshine, moonlight, good times, blame it on the boogie.
Oh yeah, I know that song, it just cut anyway. Out. And may none of your communications cut out.
What?
Bumblebee tune.